I'd like to ask you to turn with me tonight to 2 Kings chapter 6. This is the most unusual text and message that the Lord has ever placed upon my heart to close out a meeting such as this. So much so that several times today I have asked the Lord for good, clear direction, hoping that I hadn't missed his way in this matter. And then when your good people took me out here to this fellowship hall a little bit ago, and they spread before me Italian food, which is a weakness I've had for many years, I recognized that I must have been preaching too long each night, Dr. Locke, because they poured it out before me there in such a grand fashion that I had to consume it upon my lust. And nobody can preach a long time when you're as full as I am. So I must have been preaching too long this week. You certainly packed me full this evening, and I appreciate the ladies and your kindness there and the good meal, the good fellowship. I believe you're safe, though. My four-year-old grandbaby gave me some words of wisdom just the other week. I was talking to her just prior to the service time, and she said, "Papa, are you at home?" I said, "No, darling, Papa's on his long journey preaching again." We call it long journeys. She said, "I told you you couldn't go on long journeys anymore." And I said, "Darling, I needed to go. I'm preaching." She said, "Oh, you're preaching?" I said, "Yes, darling, I'm preaching." She said, "Okay, Papa, you preach good tonight and don't scream at the people." So tonight, I don't think I have the wind nor the wherewithal to be screaming at the people. So I believe you're safe. This passage is so full of practical truth. We've been privileged this week to scale some of the utmost heights and to handle what are some of the greatest themes and truths of the Bible. And yet tonight, in this particular closing message, the Lord's touched my heart with a very practical message. You'll not need an extension ladder tonight. All of the groceries will be on a lower level tonight. We'll be able to see what the Bible gives us concerning practical everyday truth. I'm sure God knows best as to how to direct us now with the time we've had together. Look with me at verse number 24 of 2 Kings chapter 6. I'm going to read one of the saddest stories in all of the Old Testament. And it came to pass after this that Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, gathered all his host and went up and besieged Samaria. And there was a great famine in Samaria, and behold, they besieged it until an ass's head was sold for 80 pieces of silver and the fourth part of a cab of dung, dove's dung, for 5 pieces of silver. And as the king of Israel was passing by upon the wall, there cried a woman unto him, saying, "Help my lord, O king." I'm sure you recognize now in your mind's eye the scene, the sadness of this particular situation. Walled cities were wonderful in their design in keeping out the intruders, and yet they would become a prison when they are besieged and no one can go out to bring in the needed water or the needed food supplies. Most of these walled cities were not privileged to have the aqueducts coming in under those massive city walls. And so they became prisons. Prisons without food. Prisons without water. And eventually, all of the water's consumed, all of the food's consumed. Now inside, the people are starving. The king now walks the top of the wall. These are wide, massive walls, and I'm sure that as he looks down on all of the people within his city, within his kingdom, he's heartbroken. He can't believe that now this appears to be the end. This is the way it's going to all end up. While he's walking around, there's a woman who looks up and she sees him. Spying by his clothing, I'm sure that this is the king. She understands that maybe, just maybe, he could help. So she cries out for some help from the Lord, her king. Verse number 27, he recognizes his limitations and allows them to be known. He said, if the Lord do not help thee, when shall I help thee? Out of the barn floor or out of the wine press? They're all empty, ma'am. I've made grand promises, as all kings and politicians do. But the truth is, I'm extremely limited myself, ma'am. There is no food in the granary. Everything's empty. It's all been consumed. There's no help here. And the king said unto her, though I'm sure just curious, she's the only one crying out to him. The others appear to be silent. What aileth thee? And she answered, this woman said unto me, give thy son that we may eat him today. And we will eat my son tomorrow. I can't even imagine this. So we boiled my son? I don't get a hold of this. And did eat him. And I said unto her on the next day, give thy son that we may eat him. And she hath hid her son. Have you ever thought about how that this woman ate a portion of her son, and by the next day, now she is so hungry again and depraved that she's willing to take another little boy's life and eat? Seems strange to me. You would think that she would have at least waited until she was 3 or 4 days hungry. And it came to pass when the king heard the words of the woman that he rent his clothes and he passed by upon the wall. And the people looked, and behold, he had sackcloth within upon his flesh. I want to preach on this little thought tonight. In this world, many times, things are not as they appear to be. They are just not as they appear to be. In order to get to that thought, I must deal, though, with this woman consuming the flesh of her own boy. And on the practical side, leading up to the message, I'd like to say that there apparently have always been certain types of parents who will bring about the death of their children. It seems to be obvious to me that this woman is wholly and solely responsible for the death of her own boy. That's not normal. I have read, I have heard in newspapers reports of those who have maybe been in airplane crashes, gone into mountainous regions. There they are, away from any help or any way to sustain life, snow-capped mountains. And I've heard of them eating the flesh of those who died in the crash. But there is something terribly out of the ordinary about a woman submitting to her own desire to eat in taking the body of her son and eating her own son. Now I say to you tonight that it's a strange parent that will bring about the death of their own children. In the county that lays below us, Union County, when Susan Smith took those little boys, trapped them in that automobile, pushed them into Long Lake, it made national news. People couldn't believe it. Now it seems as though every week or so, we hear about those who are taking their own children's lives. And we think there's something that's just not normal, just not natural about all of this. What kind of parent could actually bring about the death of their own child? Well, I'd like to say to you, any parent with abnormal appetites. Now, that's not a normal appetite, to be able to gnaw on the body of your own baby. That's an abnormal appetite. But somewhere tonight, not too far from this church, and in all of this county that we're in tonight, many around the area where I minister, they are rearing children and they have abnormal appetites. Their appetites are for the things of this world. Their appetites are for the filth. Their appetites are for the alcohol. Their appetites are for another woman or another man. Their appetites are for the limelight in the world, the party time. Their appetites are for the drugs. And the truth is, they're killing their babies. Those children don't know right from wrong. And just as surely as that woman took the boiled flesh of her own boy so that she could somehow sustain life, there are those all around us in our land who as parents have abnormal appetites. And because they have abnormal appetites, the children are dying. Another kind of parent who brings about the death of their own babies are those who have abnormal appetites and those who have friends with abnormal appetites. She said to this king when he said, "What aileth thee?" She said, "This woman, I was listening to this woman, I have a friend. And my friend spoke to me and said, we can live. I have a plan. And here's my plan. We'll take your boy today, and we'll have to sneak up on him to do this. I know this would be maybe a little difficult. We'll boil us a big pot of water, and we'll quickly put your boy in that scalding hot water. And we'll eat his flesh." Now, if you'll submit to do this, if you'll submit to do this, tomorrow we'll eat my boy. Friends with abnormal appetites. I can't imagine that anything could ever drive me. I would rather die a thousand deaths than to think about bringing about the death of one of my babies. But the truth is, I can't even imagine
bringing about the death of one of yours. I don't want that kind of friends. I don't need friends with abnormal appetites. I don't want an abnormal appetite myself, and I don't want any friends who have abnormal appetites. If anybody was ever bold enough in a situation like this to look at me and submit the same idea to me, I hope that by the grace of God, I'd be man enough to deck them. Let them know I don't want your company. Don't even hint to such wickedness as that. Don't submit it even as a joke. I don't want friends with abnormal appetites. Somewhere tonight while I'm preaching, not too far from here, there's some little old girl. She's being molested by a boyfriend of that mother who has friends with abnormal appetites. Not too far from here, there are children that are being taken advantage of by pedophiles because people are satisfied to hang around and have friends with abnormal appetites. And they are killing our babies, destroying the next generation, scarring them inside so bad they can't live healthy lives, falling them in the waters of wickedness. Mamas and daddies who have abnormal appetites will destroy their babies. Mamas and daddies who have friends with abnormal appetites, if you hang around friends with abnormal appetites, they will cause you to destroy your babies. You say, I'd never do that. You listen to them talk long enough and eventually it'll make sense. I don't want any friends with abnormal appetites. Thirdly, the kind of parent that brings death to their own babies is the kind of parent that loves themselves more than those children. And our world's full of them. What a self-centered generation. Our land is filled with a generation of people who are gluttonous hogs to be fulfilled themselves. And they will run to this thing and run to that thing. They'll farm the babies out here and farm the babies out there just so they can satisfy their own lust. And they're killing their young, destroying their own offspring because they care more about self than they do about their babies. I'm here to tell you tonight, when a person does not have Jesus Christ in their heart, they can't love anyone but self. I hear it said all the time, it's so easy to come to Jesus. I'm telling you, it's easy to take advantage of grace, but it's not easy to overcome your own pride, because man and woman loves themselves. What a selfish generation we live in. And people feel as though they're the ones that count. They're the ones that have to be catered to. And when the children are left as disposable objects, oh God in heaven, those young people walking in those streets, joining those gangs just so they can have the love, as they call it, of a family. They didn't just get there by accident. We don't have a generation of young people who are lost and disoriented. because there are too many parents loving them and caring for them. No, it's just the opposite. There are too many parents in America loving themselves. And when we love ourselves, those round about us die. The greatest obstacle to me coming to Jesus at 14 years old was my anger and my aggression, my bitterness that was deep-seated. My father was a drunkard and a liquor maker, a womanizer, a fighter. And my father literally walked into our home with his barroom maid, announced to my mother, "I don't care about you," and pointed his finger down at me and said, "I don't love him either." As though I was just another little piece of something in the way to his happiness. And for years, I thought, what a rotten, rotten, rotten boy I must be. I never heard my father say, "I love you." My father never pitched me a ball. He never showed me how to cast a hook. There was never any intimate moment with him whatsoever. And when he drank himself after stupor into a heart attack and exploded his heart with alcohol, I never even shed a tear. And if I could go back and redo it, I would do it for my grandmother's sake. I can't redo it. I can't fix it. But I refuse to even go to my own father's funeral. You know what that man did? Because he loved his barroom women, because he loved his alcohol, because he loved the party, because he loved everything outside the home instead of everything inside the home, he killed my love for him. He killed me. He killed me. I learned early how to hate, how to despise. Tonight, all over this land, there are people who just care for themselves. They brought those babies into this world, and like this woman, they said, "Heat up the water." The only thing that matters in life is if I make it, if I have my way, if I'm fulfilled. That's all that matters to me. And so the babies become disposable. The fourth kind of parent that destroys their own young. Boy, I didn't want to spend much time on these four things. It's introductory. The fourth kind of parent that destroys their young are parents who seek the wisdom of the world instead of the ways of God. This woman is not bowed in some humble corner somewhere inside those city gates and begging for the God of heaven to help her and her baby. But rather, oh, the King can help. The King will help. I can get help from the King. The kind of parents who kill their young are parents who believe in the ways of this world more than the ways of God. The wisdom of this world, they want Dr. Phil to reel their babies instead of the Holy Bible. They want some counselor down in the school to rear their babies. They want somebody who's written a book and a parenting curriculum who's never even had a child to give them wisdom about rearing their babies, and they close their minds and their hearts to the Word of God. Don't even want it breathed in our schools. They seek the wisdom of this world more than the ways of God. Now I want you to notice something, because now we're getting to the message. You'll notice that after all of this was told to the king, he couldn't believe that this woman would actually have entered into this. And it overtakes him. The Bible says he grabs his royal garments and he rips them apart. And when he does, all of the people now who are down below, they begin to look up and they say, "Behold." They're crying out, "Look! Look! Look!" And the thing that caught their attention was the fact that under those regal robes was sackcloth. This was customary in those days, that they would literally put that rough sackcloth in under their clothes as though they are trying to get the attention of God by tormenting their flesh. They would torment themselves as if to say, "My entire life is nothing but this wretched feeling of uncomfortableness." And it was that constant reminder within that everything in my world is wretched, just like this sackcloth that torments me. And they said, "Behold." What about that? Things are not always as they seem to be. Why, he's the king. When he first started coming across there, all we saw were those robes of grandeur. Even though everybody was starving, he still looked stately. He had all of his regal attire on, and he was the one who gave forth the majesty of a king. But the truth is, behold, things are not really as they appeared. We would have said, "All of us have it terrible, but that man going right there has it made." But then we find out that he really didn't have it made. And the real teaching of this story is this: that we cannot trust the wisdom of this world, because it is just as limited. No matter if you're over at the king's castle and palace, or if you're down here looking up, man has his limitations either way. And if you hang your hat on the wisdom of this world, it'll cost you your life and your babies and everything. Because things are not as they appear to be in this world. The entire thing is like a stage that's been set. Like a piece out of a movie somewhere. Like a theatrical performance. There's so much that's going on behind the scenes that really would tell the story if we could see them, but we can't see them. You can't really see what's going on in Washington, D.C. You're not allowed. You don't really know what's in the heart of those politicians. We can't see it. This is true in all of our lives and in all of society. In this world, things are not always as they appear to be. That's why you cannot trust going to the king here instead of going to the king of the glory. My babies are too important for me to entrust them to King Dr. Phil. Oh, yeah. I need to carry them to the King of Glory. My family's too important. My home's too important. My life is too important to be looking to those who are limited. I must turn my eyes to the one who has no limits. Things are not as they appear to be in this world when it comes to possessions. I'm telling you, everything has that new shine about it early on. Those possessions cause you to drool at the mouth and get your mind off God. Boy, if I just had what he has, I'd be happy. If I had what she has, I'd be happy. If I had this new automobile or that new suit or that new dress or that new outfit, well, if I had his bank account, I'd be all right. Possessions are not as they appear to be. As history has recorded it, we don't know it when we look at them today, but as history records it, there have been innumerable amounts of people who had all kinds of possessions, and you would have thought they had it made, they had it made, they had it made, and they had nothing. They had no happiness, they had no peace, they had no joy. Everybody thought, didn't they? When that superstar-looking Elvis walked through Graceland, that all those possessions made the man happy. All of the vehicles and all of the glamour and all the glitter, it all was beautiful to the eyes of America. Until we find out later that he's laid up in there, afraid to even greet people, and afraid of germs, and needing another fix. More dope. Can't cope. I'm telling you tonight, things in this world are not as they appear to be. If you think possessions will ever make you happy, you can forget it. Flip side. That king that walks across this wall here on this earth, it's not as he seems. But that king yonder in glory, flip side, he offers me just like the birds of the field. He says, I'll feed you. I'll give you raiment like the flowers that grow. He doesn't specify that it's going to be a Hummer that you'll ride in, or he doesn't even give you the grandeur of saying that I'm going to put you in a $1 million house. None of that stuff. But he just says, I'll supply needs. And I'm telling you, I'm 51 years old, and I have found out, I've met enough people to know that the happiest, most fulfilled people with the possessions they have on this earth are the ones who said years ago to the King of Glory, you know what's best? I'll take whatever pleases you. And they found out they own the whole world. Yes, glory. While the rest of them hide away seeking more volume in a palace. Sleep for the night. Possessions, they're not as they seem to be. Positions. I mean, in this world, we begin to teach these children when they're right along here. Oh, if you work hard now and you get you a good education in this area, get it in that area, and you can be somebody. And then we test them. And we find out that they're a little sharper in one area of academics than the other. So we lay heavy on them then.
And we tell them, we believe you'll make an accountant. Well, the truth is, you're a great leader. And we give them the impression, because the world always does, that position is going to be that which makes them happy. That which will fulfill their lives. I remind you tonight, the man walking the top of the wall is a king. He's a king. Now, when he first comes out, you can't tell it. You can't tell that there's any problems. Everything seems to be all right. You look at him and you say, he's made it to the top rung. He must be happy. And all of a sudden, in a moment of emotion, he reveals that his whole world is wretched. Wretched. Flip the coin. The God of glory says, you lay down your ambitions. You don't seek fame. You don't seek those positions. You lay down your ambitions. You let me tell you what I want you to be. Boy, I tell you, every boy that's ever grown up with a mom and daddy that'll bow down with them and say, I'm glad you're bright in this area, son, or that area, son. But I'm telling you, the most important thing in this world is to know what God wants for your life. Most important thing is that you know what God wants for your life. And if that leads them to the mission field in the Congo, if that leads them to a little church sitting somewhere that nobody ever knows much about, if that leads them in their community to being a lay worker, one in the church family that's maybe obscure, I'm telling you, they're going to be happy, they're going to be thrilled, they're going to be fulfilled in their life. They'll not live in the sackcloth. The positions of this world strive to be the mayor. The only happy mayors that have ever been placed into office are the ones that God said, I want to put you there for a purpose. The only happy congressmen that have ever been in those positions are the ones where God said, I want to put you there for a purpose. But just seeking that position, just to have the position, in a little bit, like recently with the governor of New York, boom. And you find out things are not always as they appear in this world. Possessions, position. Listen to me close, young person. Pleasure. Pleasure is not as it appears in this world. You ride up and down the roads and all the billboards say that the whole world's running around drinking Budweiser or Coors. You watch the television and they portray all of these wonderful, happy families that throw their drunken parties, run around on each other's mate. All kinds of wickedness. And the world seems to indicate they're having fun. It's all a party. Life's just a party. Somewhere along the way, and remember that fun in sin has a short season. That pleasure that comes in the world is short-lived. Somebody see if you can find some way to talk honestly to a Britney Spears. And we all thought that, boy, she is the pop star and having a great time. Pleasure-filled days.
Everybody thought Anna Nicole Smith was having a good time, didn't they? The whole world. Why, she's the party girl. Party girl. Things are not as they appear in this world. Now before it's all over, the robes are opened up and the whole world inside was wretched sackcloth. Even bringing her own son into that party world until he dies a young death. And then it driving her further into her stupor after stupor. But all the world says that that's pleasure. They're having a great time. It's just a party, and life's just a party. Flip the coin. There's an old book you call the Bible, and young person, your friends will scoff it. And they'll say, we don't want anything to do with that book. It won't let us have any fun. It's too rigid. It says no to too many things, too many pleasures. It says no to too many pleasures. I'm telling you something, that king that walks across this wall of this world is lying to you. He's wearing beautiful garments, but in a little bit, it won't take long, he's going to get around to you on that wall and boom, somewhere in the corner of a little dark crack house, rolled up in a prenatal position. You wish to God that you had never, 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 never gone the way of the king of this world. But the king of glory says, I know what's best for you. I created you. You submit to me and let me tell you how to live. And you make sure your life is not lived for your pleasure, but lived for mine. And every now and then when you need it most, right while you're just doing your Christian duty. And yes, it's tough in the eyes of the world, and it doesn't seem like it's pleasure filled. Every now and then, just while you're walking right along and doing your Christian duty, God said, I'll sneak up behind you. And I'll tackle you with all the joy you can stand. All the pleasure you can stand. All the fulfillment you can handle. Let me tell you something tonight. I'm not the best preacher that'll ever come to this place. But I very well may be the happiest. The best. The best. The best. Pleasure you'll ever know is following the King of Glory. The King of Glory. Because the king of this world has nothing but sackcloth to offer. In the end, he's limited. Please stand tonight. I'm through preaching. While heads are bowed and eyes are closed, musicians are coming. Brother Chad's coming tonight as well. Maybe there are folks here tonight that you know right now, beyond a shadow of a doubt, you know that God sent me this way tonight with this message for you. You know that it was for you. And then tonight, maybe it wasn't for you, but maybe it was for you to be praying for those that are close to you who are killing their babies, killing their young, killing their offspring because they're going with the wisdom of the world
instead of the ways of God. Maybe you're here tonight and you're not born again. The devil has lied to you. Things of this world are not as they appear. Come tonight to Jesus. I can't help but ask you right now, is there some mother, some dad in the building that tonight you needed to hear the preacher say that you don't need to have an abnormal appetite? Is there one in the building tonight who've allowed your friendships to be too close with those who have abnormal appetites? Well, I'm begging you to come tonight. Come to Jesus. Tell you, His way is the best way. The best way. Dear God in heaven, just now in this very solemn, very sacred moment, I'm begging, dear God, please touch tonight and work in that heart that may not even be born again. They've been fed the lie of the devil, and the world looks good to them. God, I pray tonight that You'd help them to see that they need to turn to Jesus, the God of this universe, the God of glory. Lord, I pray that You'd help them to see tonight that this world's pleasures are short-lived. Oh, dear God, tonight bring them to Jesus. And I beg tonight for mamas and daddies and grandmothers and granddads. Oh, God in heaven, help me, help me, help me, dear God, I beg. Lord, help me to desire Your will and Your way and to believe that Your will and Your way is the best way. Please help each home tonight. Lord, for these who pray and others who may come, I pray that You'd work, God, and help us. What number, brother? 375, if you want to join tonight in this good song. If you need to join around these altars, I'd do that quickly tonight. Let's mean what we sing, have thine own way. Yes, yes, yes. Have thine own way, Lord. Daddy, for those babies' sake, that needs to be your cry tonight. Dear God in heaven, have thine own way. Mama, if you love those babies tonight, let that be the cry of your heart. Have thine own way.